This is The Unseen, and I'm your host, Mike Cleland. On this episode, I am quite honored to talk to Alan Stivelman, and he is an Argentinian filmmaker who has just made a remarkable documentary called Witness of Another World. We talk about this in the beginning of our interview, but then we move on to an older film, a film that he did in 2013 called Humano. And that is going to be the core of this interview. What I do want to say, and I say this very early on in the interview also, is that anyone listening to this should see Witness of Another World. It is a remarkably touching, lovely documentary. It is about the UFO contact experience. It is framed in a way that I have never seen a filmmaker try to so tenderly portray someone who has had the direct contact experience. Having listened to him talk to both Whitley and a handful of other podcasters, the stories he shares, I feel like I can safely say that movie, Witness of Another World, was made not only in a synchronistic cloud, where coincidences were unfolding in a way that propelled the movie forward. I would say that that movie had to happen. It happened magically. That might be a bold statement, but that is certainly how it feels. And I think I can safely say that about his first movie too, the focus of this audio interview, the movie Humano. This audio conversation was recorded Tuesday, November 19th, 2019. Please enjoy. Alan, I want to thank you so much for saying yes to this interview. It means a lot to me.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thanks for having me.
Now, first off, I want to say I found your film Witness of Another World really, truly moving. Just so you know, the listeners to this website are very well versed. They're up to speed. They are very open and receptive to exactly the kind of information that you shared in that movie, Witness of Another World. And I was very impressed because a lot of people within this little research community, not only researchers, but more importantly, the people who have had the direct contact experience. I've heard from a lot of them, and they were also very impressed. And I've also had the experience, the direct contact experience. So I am very, very grateful that you made that movie. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your words. It's, for me, it's been a lovely journey sharing this movie, this message, because I know it's kind of unique the way we expose this content.
I felt like I, the viewer, was treated as an adult, and it meant a lot to me to be. I mean, there's a lot of modern documentary filmmaking with rapid fire editing, and it seems like more like a rock video than it does a piece of journalism or storytelling.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I try to avoid those kind of feeling or aesthetic. I try to, yes, to show a story of life, a true life story that happened to a man that now he's 52. And I try the message of the movie is a healing journey, as you said. And I'm really thankful for the opportunity of making this kind of content, because at the beginning of the project, I had like two options: to make a movie about the UFO phenomenon and try to expose new theories around that phenomenon, or try to help a suffering man that was in pain for more than 4 decades. And I took that path, try to get answers to Juan. And that's the result of the movie. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that it's why it's so moving.
Well, you did. It's a beautiful movie. And just a few weeks ago, Whitley did a beautiful interview with you. And anyone who listens to this interview and has not heard that interview, I think they can be heard in any order. But if you haven't heard that interview, you must go back and listen to it. He also interviews Dr. Jacques Vallée. And you both shared both the experience of making the movie and the power of that. Now, what I want to focus on here is you made an earlier film in 2013, Humano. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, it's correct.
Okay, Humano. And so there's so many similarities to this first film and your more recent film. And one of the similarities is you play a character in each of these films. You are right there in both of these films. You're the centerpiece of the 2013 film. For the listeners, can you just give a brief introduction of what that film was and how it came to be?
Well, the beginning of the project was, I was studying the Andes. I was studying a lost civilization that was settled in South America, and I was trying to get evidences from that civilization. So one of my main points was to find some there is an ancient structures below Lake Titicaca. Lake Titicaca is a lake that is shared between Peru and Bolivia. It's one of the most highest lakes in the world. So I went there because two things happened when I was 23. I was having an existential crisis when I was 23. I wanted to know more about life, about death. I didn't find any kind of meaning to my own life. So I decided to quit everything, my job, my studies, everything. And I needed to go to the Andes, to the place that I was studying for more than 5 years. So it was like something that it need to be done. So I went there to the Andes, and there, while I was doing my own research about this lost civilization, I met a shaman, an Andean shaman, and when I told him that I was searching for this lost civilization, the origin of man, these structures below Lake Titicaca, he replied to me with a pretty short sentence saying to me something like, if you want to learn about humanity, first you need to be human. And when he said that to me, I felt something really weird in my head, in my body, because I didn't understand what he was telling to me, what is to be, why I'm not a human being from his point of view, from his perspective. And we spent the whole day, and he was trying to explain to me the meaning of being human being from his Andean worldview. So in a way, we are all human beings from the genetics or biological perspective, but none from the spiritual perspective. In a way, from the Andes point of view, the human condition is a state of mind. It's something that we need to achieve, something that we need, it needs to be conquered. So it's the first step from their hierarchy is to be a runa. The runa, it's a human being. Then you can become a Pampa Misayoc, Alto Misayoc. These are another kinds of levels for their shamanism way of living. So the first step is to be a runa, a human being. So then I decided to make a journey with him, and we spent 6 months traveling from different places, from the Andes, from the Andean mountains. And by that time, I went to the Andes with 200 questions, write it in my notebook. And after a week, I decided to erase at least 100 questions, and then I rewrote it because I needed my whole perspective and my mission with this journey change completely, because now, but that time I wanted to know more about what is to be a human being from their point of view. And then I decided to dive more into Andean shamanism because it was my first step with indigenous culture. I was never being interested on indigenous cultures or shamanism. My main interest was just archaeology and the search of this lost civilization. But their answer was, if you want to know more about these kind of things from the spiritual realm, first you need to be human. So let's go back to school and then start to understand what is nature, what they are, what, who are you, et cetera, et cetera.
And when in this process did the film crew arrive? I mean, this...
No, never. I was the only crew in that film.
You were, so there was no film crew at all. It was just you. There's actually a beautiful scene where the Placido is the shaman you're working with.
Yes, exactly.
You're having a conversation with him, and he just reaches out and takes the camera out of your hand and points it right back at you, and you don't say anything. You just stand there and look sort of sheepish, I guess.
Surprised.
And he just asks question after question and tells you all these things. And so there was no film crew at all.
No.
So anytime someone is filming you, you simply handed the camera to whoever was there?
Exactly. Sometimes the tripod was a stone. Other times, I just managed the, because I didn't know by the time that I was doing a film or a movie. I remember that there is a scene that he asked me, what are you planning to do with this? And I replied like, well, I hope I can do a movie. But my main goal was to record as much as I can with my, instead of writing as a diary, I prefer to record it and to have scenes for I don't know what purpose. And yes, we were just Placido and myself. Sometimes other people were during our trip because, for example, I was living in his house with his family, with his son, with his daughter, with his wife. And for example, I went to Queros. Queros is the place that he born, is an old community in the middle of the mountain that was, it was discovered by Western people in the 60s. And that time was the first time that Western people knew that there were people that they were called the Queros. And Placido came from that village. And he, at the age of 18, he moved to Lima, the capital city of Peru, and that's why he started to learn Spanish. Placido is one of the few shamans in Queros community that knows how to communicate with others, because the other ones only speak in Quechua language. That's the language for the Incas, for example.
My word. So this is really a surprise. I had no idea. So the way I pictured the production of this movie, I thought you were sitting around with your film school buddies or something like that and sort of said, here's a good idea for a documentary. I'm going to go off into the mountains and I'm going to have this journey and I'm going to document it. And I almost thought the idea of the film came first, and it's not that at all.
No.
Your journey, your...
No, not at all.
Your yearning came first.
Exactly. And more
hats off to you. More that now I'm very, very, I'm got super excited when you told me that, because that makes the movie for me, who I worked, did a little bit of work in the film industry. I know sort of what's involved in the thing and the amount of work involved. And I am now much, much more impressed with the message and the movie as a whole. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for your words. It was a really fun experience because I learned a lot from the filmmaking side, but in the other side, it was a personal journey. And thanks to the shaman, thanks to Placido, I was in front on the camera because it was not part of my plan to be exposed on my own journey.
The movie begins with you sitting looking at some photographs of yourself as a young boy. And I can relate to this. So I've written about this. I've talked about this. I have suffered most of my life from severe clinical depression. And I had my own existential crisis. I was a little older. I was 30 when I had mine. And it changed everything. And basically, you know, the everything crumbled and I had to rebuild it. So that scene, just the very first opening scene of the film where you're going through your photographs and just noticing that you're not smiling anymore. That was, you were talking right to me. Now, so this movie and Witness of Another World, in essence, they're the same movie. You play the person on the journey in one, and Juan is the person on the journey in the other movie. And it was extremely clear to me that these were, in essence, very similar films. You know, this journey, the tempo of the films, the music. There was this very lovely gentleness to both of these films. And so I appreciate that enormously.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for noticing that aspect. And it's true. It's the spirit is the same.
It almost, it's funny because I watched them right close together. And then just even a few days later, there was this blurring. It was like, wait a minute, did this, which, was it this movie or that movie? The movie did he look at the pictures in which? So yes, so they blurred together in a very thoughtful way. Hey, I hate to say this, but we are going to have to interrupt our conversation and we're going to have to take a short commercial break. For free Dreamlanders, you will hear a few commercials. For paying members, we will be right back.
You think that what subscribers to UnknownCountry.com get is just an archive or a rehash of what you can hear for free? Not quite true. Listen to this.
The Indonesian doctor is writing an article in the 1980s. This is more than 10 years after the mysterious German doctor has died. And now he's writing his recollections of that whole episode. And one of his recollections was that there was a small boy at one time when he first met the doctor in the island of Sumbawa. There was a small American boy living with him.
And that small American boy may very well have been the son of the mysterious doctor that Peter LaVenda is talking about. A special interview called Adolf Hitler in Asia. That boy went on to grow up, to come to the United States, to become a horrendous anti-Semite and serial killer. He was executed in Indiana in 2010. I'm telling you, you don't hear this anywhere else. Nowhere else. So come on, get on the stick. Become a subscriber to UnknownCountry.com. I guarantee you there is incredible information in our subscriber area, and we need you to keep supporting this. It's important. There's no place like it. No other website offers you the amazing riches of unusual and extraordinary information that we do. Subscribe today.
Ever wonder which Whitley Strieber books are available and where you can get them? Now you can go to Whitley Strieber's dedicated book website, Strieber.com, and shop for every Whitley Strieber item that's available. Many of them are available in electronic form, as well as hardcover and paperback. Experience the magic of transformation, the insights of breakthrough, the joy of miraculous journey. Join Whitley on the wondrous journey of that is his life. Thrill to his fiction, the magic of Orenda, the startling power of Alien Hunter, and so much more. Go to Strieber.com now and explore.
We are back on The Unseen with my guest, Alan Stevelman, and we are talking about his first movie, Humano, where he talks about his own personal journey. Now, this movie opens with an animation. There's several points within the film that are kind of punctuated or secondary stories are told through animation. This animation is very simple, but at the same time, how to say this, it felt like I was viewing a dream from another culture. I was viewing someone else's dream. You know, like I know what my own dreams are like. This wasn't like that. This was culturally alien to me, these dreams. I mean, obviously, they're just little narratives or little parables or stories. But there was quite a mood. How did this animation get produced?
That's a good question. Well, from the technical perspective, it was all the animation was done. The same person did it. Emmanuel Figueroa, he's an amazing artist from Argentina. He was the responsible to make this animation. And the intro, he spent more than 4 months to do it because he drew a very, it was like a 2 meters wide map that he had to draw it from. He drew it all it since the beginning. And I wanted, it's a difficult question because I have to travel back to when I was 26 and I was kind of obsessed with the idea of the tunnels of the Andes, because that was one of my researches. And yeah, my quest was what is below the Andes, what is in the underground, because according to the legends and according to Spanish chronicles, below the Andes, there is a network of chambers, artificial chambers and tunnels that are all connected. According to the legend, all the Americas are connected thanks to these tunnels. And the Inca knew those tunnels and they use it to hide all the treasures, the gold treasures. So the Spanish conquerors took plenty of gold from the Americas, but the most important treasure is still hidden. And I was kind of obsessed about this underworld idea and the idea that according to other myths and legend, there are probably a whole civilization underground. That for me, it was something really hard to believe. I was quite skeptic. I'm still a very material and skeptic person. But I don't know. By that time, I wanted to plant a seed in the mind of the audience to in a very artistic way and try to show that probably under our earth there is a network of tunnels. And also I decided to point Cusco because there is at the beginning of the intro there is a light that comes from Tibet, the Himalayas, and travels the whole world. And then this light landed on the center of Cusco in Peru. And then the intro continues and show this network of tunnels. So I wanted to plant this seed of idea.
It's really beautiful, yeah. And it's very eerie. Now the next question: who did the music for this film? It's almost not music at all. Sometimes it's just like this droning tone that just rides under the visuals and very haunting and really gave a depth and a mood that was. I almost want to find that music. Doing this podcast, I I want to underlay some of the audio with a tone like that. And I was like, this is perfect.
Well, it was a mix because the main themes, that there are three songs, they were played by Pilo Garcia. He's from Argentina, a very close friend of mine. And the ambient music from animation scenes, for example, it was made from Pablo Pico. He was the sound designer, and he's an experimental musician. So he experimented a lot with the film, and I really like the outcome of the sound of the movie.
Yes, I do too. Yes, yes. Hey, I have been listening to a handful of audio interviews that you have done. It's funny, I feel like the people in this little world who are doing UFO podcasting, a lot of them are my friends. So there's a Greg Bishop did a beautiful interview, and so did Ryan Sprague did a wonderful interview also in Whitley. What you talked about in those interviews, was the synchronicities that were emerging during the filmmaking, and some of them went beyond synchronicities,
yes.
but they were almost like magical moments when you were producing the movie Witness of Another World. Now, for this movie, were there any similar type of synchronistic events?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And I think it was because, as I said, I was at the beginning of the project for 3 years, I was searching about this lost civilization. And I remember a friend of mine told me that there will be a lecture about Andean worldview 3 blocks away from my house. And I went there. It was a very tiny place. I think it was 10 people there or 12. And it was organized by a travel agency from Cusco. It was one of the hosts was Placido. It was his first time that he traveled away from Peru. And he went to Argentina in order to explain this Andean worldview, to share the whole mission of this lecture was to sell tickets to Peru, because it was organized by a travel agency and they got a shaman to explain the roots of Peru. And it was my first time and connection with Placido, but I didn't know by that time that he was a shaman. I met him as a tour guide, and I think it was 1 year and a half later, I wrote to him and asked him if I can be in touch when I go to Peru. And thanks to my friend that she invited me to be present to this lecture, I was able to make this movie, because if not, I will make the Humano will never exist, because I will never meet Placido. I had to be on that lecture in that moment. And thanks to my investigation on this lost civilization, I was able to make not just Humano, I was able to make Witness. And I always thought that the search of this lost civilization, it will be my first movie, my first project. Now I have to tell you that it will be my next project. But I was not able to make this project when I was 22. I had to get plenty of experiences and be more mature in order to enter this kind of content, because it's really hard to explain this whole idea of a lost civilization that was settled in the Americas, probably during the Ice Age or pre the Ice Age. So we are talking about probably 20,000 years ago or more. And when I was 22, I was really willing to make this movie, but I was not mature enough. If you look to my two movies, the first one, I needed to understand who am I, what is to be a human being. So it was a quite emotional journey for me, for myself.
And for me, watching it too, I have to say. My partner Andrea and I both watched it, and we were both very moved.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And Witness, it was also very emotional for me and for Juan, of course, but it for me, it was more like, how can I say? It was like altered state of mind experience, because my whole perception of reality change, I was able to understand much better the supernatural realm. And now with those experiences, I'm able to enter and make this new movie about the lost civilization, because I have more tools to make this happen.
So you, in that first movie, you allowed yourself to appear very vulnerable and very lost in that film. All your doubts and all your fears were right there on the surface. It didn't feel like anything was hidden. And at one point in that movie, you walk into a turquoise lake. And I mean, you're in your underwear, and so is the shaman. I mean, it's a little, I was like, wow, that's really, that would be a tough sell, I think, for an actor, right? Okay, you know, you're just, now get in your underwear and we're going to put you in this movie. So, and you said you were, this was a ritual of giving yourself to the water.
Yes.
The water from the melting glaciers. These glaciers are from the ancient snows. And Placido equated the ancient snowfall to the ancient wisdoms. And there they were in that beautiful, cold, turquoise lake. So, and here's my, I guess my question. Did you know at the time when you were being filmed that this would later be turned into a, to a, like a feature film?
Oh, no. No, not at all. And
I think that's almost better if you didn't know.
Yes, of course. And because it was more spontaneous. And also for me, it was sometimes I had plenty of hard experiences that I was not allowed to shoot it. Because, for example, the night before that I entered to this lake, I was feeling awful. After hiking more than 10 hours, we arrived to this mountain, Osangate. We spent the whole night there. It was a special night because it was August the 3rd. It's a really special date for indigenous cultures. It's the Pachamama's Day. It's a day that is really special because they said that the spirits are close to us. It's the day that the spirits are, it's like the closest moment that these spirits are next to us. So it's a very special day. But in the other hand, I was feeling, I was literally feeling that I was dying the whole night because I get a pretty heavy headache. I was with plenty of fever. I was a little bit hallucinating. And Placido told me that my body was not well prepared to connect with this realm. In one hand, my consciousness and my spirit was prepared because it was really powerful, but my body was not well prepared enough. So that was, I was receiving attacks. That was his words. So I spent the whole night feeling really awful. And I was not able to record that scene because it will be wonderful to have me like hallucinating, having fever, but there was no cameraman there to grab my camera and record myself. So the next day, that was the day that I entered to this lake. I was feeling really awful. And when I came out the lake, I was feeling much more better. I was purely, I was healed. The whole pain, my stomach was feeling better. There was no headache. I was really happy. And that's why I started to make some funny dances. And it was purely spontaneous.
Well, and the dancing shows up again in your follow-up movie, in Witness, where there's so much dancing that takes place. And I recognize that dancing was in both of these films. And
oh, yes.
It took place spontaneously with a healing, yeah.
You're right. There is a relationship between movement, dance, and healings. But during Humano, I was not conscious enough. So the only way to express my happiness was to make those movements.
And there were some local folks playing, it looked like drums, right in the background there, yeah.
Yes.
And they carried the drums up there? They hiked 10 hours with drums?
Yes, because all the rituals are full of music, and especially drums and flutes.
Now, these men, they came up there to help you. So there was a team of men, it looked like, that was there along with Placido, and they did this 10-hour hike. Was that for you that they did the hike?
No. It was for them or for the whole community. It's a special day. And it's usually people make like a, how do I say, pilgrim?
Pilgrimage, sure.
Pilgrimage, exactly, to Osangate, because Osangate is the highest mountain in the Cusco Valley. So it's really important for them, that mountain.
Okay, wonderful. Hey, I apologize. Once again, we are going to have to take a break. This is our second and final break. For free Dreamlanders, you're going to hear a few commercials. For paying members, we will be right back.
Say yes to Serious Wonder. Unknown Country offers so much. Free Dreamland, a free weekly newsletter. Free daily news, a thriving free message board. But it all depends on you becoming a subscriber. And you get so much more. Dreamland and special interview archives going back years. Vintage Dreamland from the broadcast days. Live chats with our extraordinary guests. So say yes to Serious Wonder. Click on that subscribe tab on Unknown Country today.
The key, the mystery, the wonder. Now in a powerful new edition from Tarcher Penguin. Whitley Strieber updates the thrilling story with new revelations. Even the master of the key's most incredible predictions are coming true. We've discovered that there are many universes besides our own. He predicted this in 1998. He described how intelligent machines could be built. We're doing it now. If you love the key, you need this new edition. And if you've never read it before, don't miss this beautiful book, filled with true wisdom and true revelations. The key is unique in this world. Graham Hancock says, "Consider its messages, and you'll find it has worked a kind of magic on you." The Key, a selection of the Quality Paperback Book Club, the Book of the Month Club, and the One Spirit Book Club. Available in paperbacks everywhere and online in all ebook formats.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world, but you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
We are back on The Unseen with my guest, Alan Stevelman, and we are talking about his film, Humano. Now, here's a question for you. Did you ever read the book by Dr. John Mack titled Passport to the Cosmos? It came out in 1999, I believe.
Yes, I read it when I was studying the abduction phenomenon, and John Mack was my door to enter this phenomenon, because the first step that I took beforehand the Witness of Another World, I was doing a script. It was a fiction story, and it was about an abduction case from a couple of teenagers, and I was doing automatic writing by that time, and after
Wait, you were doing automatic writing?
Yes.
Okay. Were you writing the script automatically?
Yes, because I was doing it was a new technique for me, and I was trying to practice my writing skills, and then I decided to make automatic writing, and after some weeks, I realized that I was writing a story about an abduction from a couple. She was pregnant from dimensional entities. I had to read it again. I never read it, but I think they were angels from the Bible that took her and make an embryo on her stomach.
That's already in the Bible, that story.
Yeah, and I think it came across, and then I decided to make, I don't know, because it was from my unconscious. But after 30 pages, I said to myself, I know nothing about abduction. I know nothing about extraterrestrial hypothesis. And then I decided to bought the books from John Mack, I don't remember.
Abduction is the first
Abduction,
one.
Yes. Yeah. Abduction and the other one.
Yes. Now, the reason I asked about Passport to the Cosmos, because I guess it applies a little more to Witness, your second film. For those of the listeners who may not know, the premise of the book Passport to the Cosmos, written by Dr. John Mack, he was a Harvard psychiatrist. I think he was chair of the psychiatry department. I think I have that right. So he wrote a book where he compared and contrasted the UFO contact experience, what we would call UFO abduction, to the shamanic initiation process.
Hmm.
And he basically equated that they were the same thing, in essence, or they were mirroring each other in a way that he took note of. And he's not the only one that has noticed that. So it's very interesting that you already had, I guess now I'll go back half a step, was your experience in the Andes that was recorded in your first movie, was this an initiation for you to become a shaman?
That's a hard one. Well, I thought that my experience in Peru with the shamanism, I remember that while I was speaking with the audience, while I was presenting Humano, plenty of people asked me, okay, what's next? What are you going to do with shamanism now because you are a shaman, because I had an initiation? And then I always said, no, I'm not a shaman. I did not receive an initiation. Humano was my first step and my end step with shamanism. My next movie will not have nothing to do with shamanism. And the funny thing, was that while I was studying Juan's story, we realized with Dr. Nestor Berlanda that Juan had plenty of shaman roots in his blood, because he came from the Guarani tribe. And my first step that I took doing this film was to go to the jungle and to interview these shamans. I decided to go to the closest tribe to the open ones, because Guarani tribe are one of the most important indigenous cultures in South America, but they are really close. They are warriors, and they don't like white men. They had their reasons, of course. And when I went there, I remember that I was received by Plutarco, and Plutarco told us to the whole crew that he dreamt about our visit. He knows the reasons of why are we here, and he were welcoming us, and he was decided to open his community, his knowledge, and he will be able to speak for the first time about the secrets of the supernatural world and all his Guarani knowledge. So for me, it was more than a gift. And I will never say again that I'm ended with shamanism.
So then that's a good answer, because I've talked to many shamans, and the real ones, I'll ask, hey, are you a shaman? And if they kind of go, well, you know, that's a difficult question, and that's a very personal question, then I know they're a shaman. Sometimes people will just sort of blurt out like, hey, I'm a shaman. And I have to take a couple of steps back and go, wait a minute. But at the same time, shamanism there's no definition in the dictionary.
Exactly.
Now I'm going to ask you, what is your definition of a shaman?
Well, for my perspective, a shaman is a person that has the ability to enter and penetrate other realms. And for me, in my own definition, Juan is a potential shaman. He's acting as a shaman, but so far he's not fully aware of his full potential. because I know he has, for example, the healing gift, but he's not healing anyone, just his animals, for example, because he's not fully aware. But I know deep in my heart that he will become like a healing man or a medicine man in a near future. Not now, but probably in 5 years or 10. It's on his destiny. But I think not everyone...
Well, you sound like a shaman right now when you say that kind of thing. So,
well, I'm probably hiding in my film, in my role as a filmmaker. My exterior role is a filmmaker, but I don't know, I'm trying to guess who I am also, thanks to my movies and my research.
So your journey is transparent. It's right there on the screen. I mean, I can sense the journey that took place in both these movies. I mean, there's a filmmaker named Bill Moyers, and did you ever see, there was a series of interviews with mythologist Joseph Campbell. They were called Power of Myth.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. I saw it, yes. 8 hours, I think they are 8 or 10 hours, yes.
Yes, 7 or 8 hours, yes. And I watched him first on VHS. Actually, I watched him on PBS ages ago. That won't mean anything to you. Now, I think it's in that, I'm not sure where he says it. No, so Bill Moyers was the fellow who did the interviews, and he did a lot of very sensitive and very provocative documentaries also. Hundreds of them, oftentimes very short for television. And he said there are two types of documentaries. There's one where you have an idea that you want to present, and you know what the documentary is before you're going to make it. Mm. And he says there's another kind that you don't know, have any idea how it's going to turn out before you start. You just begin making it.
Exactly.
And the documentary is the journey. Yes. Now, so you're obviously coming from
that kind.
So.
And it's really hard to find investors that are willing to give money. Just give me, and I will see what I will come with this money. Yes.
Well,
and my next project is all about this kind of film. It's a really high budget movie because we are willing and we want to make an excavation in Cusco. That's the whole purpose of this movie, because for the first time, we want to expose the hardcore evidences of this lost civilization, that there was a very big and high-tech civilization that was settled in the Americas way before the history books are telling us about our past.
Okay, so you do have a good premise of this third film.
Oh, yeah.
Ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And it's not a documentary. It's a scripted film, or...?
No, it's a documentary.
Okay.
We want to make a real excavation, and okay. I want to travel to India to talk to experts of Vedic books and texts, because they all speak plenty of culture, Egypt, from India, in Tibet also, the Bon religion. Everyone speaks about their gods, that there was a very big civilization, that they were like their fathers for them. It was like a solar race. The Greeks called them as the Hyperborea or the Aryans. For example, in Tibet, they are known as the people from Shambhala. And also in the Andes happened the same thing. So I want to bring all these pieces together and try to portray the whole picture. It's the same that Graham Hancock speaks on his books. I want to have him on board. I'm waiting for his response. And also, I will be working with Anselm Pirambla. He's a Spanish researcher, and he will be the main character of the excavation in Peru. We know where are the location for these tunnels, and we want to show these evidences because we think that we are in the right time to expose these discoveries.
And I will add that in your first film, Humano, there's much of it takes place in caves and in these dark hallways that I think are in Machu Picchu. Is that right? There's these.
Yes, there is was in Machu Picchu and also in Sacsayhuaman, that it's near Cusco.
So very interesting, very interesting. Now you don't know me, but I still teach these skills. I taught outdoor skills starting in 1994, and I've been teaching them. That's now 25 years ago. And I have spent a lot of time in the wilderness. I taught at a school where we would go out for 30 days at a time. So I've spent a lot of time in big, big isolated wilderness in Alaska, in Canada, and in the Rockies. So when all this terrain that you, where you were hiking in the Andes, oftentimes you were hiking in your camera, you looked tired. And I was like, and you were at high elevation?
Yeah, 4,000. In that footage, when I'm really tired, I was almost 5,000 meters above the sea level.
Okay, so I know what that means because I have taken people up to that elevation many times. And I felt like the terrain was familiar, like that glacial lake. I've been to many lakes like that. Hmm. But the culture was exotic. So in some sense, I understood what it meant to be remote. And I don't know how much time you had spent in that type of terrain leading up to this. But for me, there's a very powerful spiritual reward for going into that wilderness. You know, leaving one society, some people call it the real world. I don't know if you use that term. Like, you know, the world with telephones and traffic and appointments, that's people call that the real world, and this other world is something else. But I feel strongly that that wilderness is also the real world.
Yes.
And I take offense to that term. So
yes.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is that had you spent that much time in there, was that also part of the spiritual journey, this kind of immersion into a wilderness environment, especially a harsh wilderness environment that's cold and it's hard to breathe in?
Well, I spent 6 months in the Andes, and what I learned is that sometimes it's really necessary to be in really hard environment because you will challenge your own mind. You will push yourself to your own boundaries. And I remember I was really hard. I was quite skeptic. I was really suffering with my own thoughts, but I was willing to push me further, and I wanted to break my own barriers, and because I was really hard, I needed to go to one of the most hardest places in the world, and this is the Andes, Tibet, Alaska, and it was really necessary to push myself to these boundaries, to go to really cold places. For example, one of the tales that they told me was that if we want to become Alto Misayoc, that is one of the highest levels in Andean shamanism, sometimes you have to go to a cave, for example, in Lake Titicaca, the lake in the movie, that is this frozen lake, and you spend a week or 10 days or 12, whatever it takes, inside of this frozen cave until you receive a thunder. A thunder will hit your body and you will like get unconscious for a couple of minutes, and then you will receive the rumis. The rumis are like the stones, the magical stones. And with that rumi, you will become as Alto Misayoc, and you will be able to communicate with the Apus. The Apus are the spirits from the mountains. So this, it's like their cell phone for them. They give you these stones as a way to communicate with that realm. But nowadays, there are no people that want to spend 2 weeks or 3 weeks in this frozen lake. So we are losing this ancient tradition because young people from the mountains, from the Andes, or from the Guarani, are suffering the same thing. Western society are entering to these villages, to this community, and giving them our technology, our distraction. I think that's the best way to describe. Our distraction are killing these ancient traditions. But I think after this earthquake of knowledge, something new will happen. I have a positive perspective. I don't know what will be the outcome. Probably nothing good will happen. But after that, a new beginning will happen in a new, different way.
You are talking the language of the UFO abductee when you say that. I mean, what you're saying is nothing that I haven't heard from people who have had UFO contact. Let me put it that way. Now, I recognize that too, that these tools, computers and cell phones and Western music and is very seductive. And it can be, and I have been to many in America here, Indian reservations, and they can be terribly sad places. There's a broken, people are broken, and it's, you can just see it in the faces. And at the same time, their traditions, many of them have been lost, but the ones that are remaining, I think that people are clinging to them, and I hope they remain. And I think that your films certainly give me hope that these traditions that are unfamiliar to me, they are not my traditions, but I hope that they remain. Now, in a time not long ago, there would have been someone, you know, a few hundred years ago, in every village who would be able to aid and guide the tribe, right? The shaman.
Yes.
So if someone had a spiritual question, you know, they would have a resource. You could just walk to the teepee at the edge of the village and ask the shaman, I had a powerful experience, I had a visionary experience, whether that's seeing a flying saucer or whether that's being in an existential crisis. And I worry that we no longer have that.
Yes.
But these same tools, these same computers, like I could just click on iTunes and download your movie and watch it. And so I'm using this technology and I'm hopeful. So what is your role in this?
Yes, that's a hard one because I usually ask myself the same things, the same question, because sometimes I want to quit all and go to the mountains and end of story, just live there among the animals, nature, my books, my research. But then I spend probably, I don't know, 5-6 hours with my cell phone, reading, working, studying. I think that everything has to be in balance because we have this technology, and if we use it on a good way, we will achieve pretty good stuff. For example, making movies, making books, making podcasts that connect people, spread the knowledge. But what I've been seeing during my research in these kind of communities, for example, because they are so innocent in a way, because they are not born with this technology, they get easily distracted and they are not going in pilgrimage, or they don't want to make more rituals. They just want to use North Face clothes or use iPhones. And that's the sad part of the story. And probably, I don't know what will be the result of this interaction. But in the other hand, plenty of white men or Western people are getting interested on this knowledge or these kind of topics. And that's the positive way that I'm seeing this combination of technology, distraction, ancient knowledge. I think it's really important. For example, in my case, I try to disconnect from everything and make a journey or make a trip to the wilderness and just to clear my mind. For example, a couple of days I was in the desert. I went to Morocco and I was in the desert, in the mountains, also connecting to the people, to the local tribes. And for me, it's like that's my food, my inner food. And those practices are really important to have it periodically. I know it's not easy to quit everything and make some trips, but we have to be able to know ourselves and know what is better for us. And in my case, to make trips and read some books, that's my spiritual food. And that gives me power to make more films or want to know more. And that's my recipe.
Alan, I want to thank you so much. This interview has been a total delight.
Thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure, and it was really nice to chat in with you and with all your audience.
And I'm sure they'll be grateful too. I certainly am. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Mike, and I am chiming in after the editing. I don't know how clear it was in the audio interview, but I was blown away when Alan said that he didn't plan on making a movie and that it was all just this footage from what amounted to a video diary of his time with Placido, the shaman. That really struck me as something powerful. Now, that he actually put together this feature-length film, that's engaging from beginning to end, that he put that together from this footage that he shot with no real intention of doing anything with it except it being a diary, that to me hints at something sort of magical taking place here. Now this film, and I don't want to give anything away, at the culmination of this film, this is not a spoiler, there's a scene that ends with a candle being blown out. Fades to black, and then they roll the credits. Now that scene, there's a powerful thing that takes place at that scene. It is unbelievably simple. And when Andrea and I were watching this, when that scene took place, both of us audibly gasped. We both went, So there's something remarkable in this very subtle, simple film. And I don't want to fawn over it too much. I felt like I did that enough during my talk with Alan. A couple of small things here. At one point in the audio interview, Alan said he was at a high elevation. He said he was just below 5,000 meters. Now, 5,000 meters, and I actually had to use my little desk calculator to figure this out, 5,000 meters in elevation is 16,400 feet. Now, he said he was just below that, so if we call that 15,000 feet, that's pretty darn high. That is some real deal elevation. And for example, Mount Whitney, the highest point in the continental United States, Mount Whitney in the Sierras, is 14,505 feet. That is the very tippy top. That is the summit. And I'll tell you, that mountain kicks some people's butt as far as just the elevation alone, not the physical exertion getting up there, just the lack of oxygen. So the fact that he was huffing and puffing, I understand that. So I've only been to that elevation a very few times, and people suffer, like athletes suffer at that elevation. Now, another thing that I want to point out, and I'm going to read this back because I wrote it down. When I was talking to Alan about the lessons of being in a harsh environment and what he took away from it and the rewards from it, he said, and I'm reading this here, he said, "What I learned, it's really necessary to be in a hard environment because you will challenge your own mind. You will push yourself beyond your own boundaries." Now, during this conversation, I talked about the fact that I had worked for many years at an outdoor school, And what he was saying there is what we as instructors, as guides, were encouraged to do, to set these trips up so that the clients, the students, would be able to push themselves beyond their own boundaries. And this was a remarkably rewarding job for me, to spend 20 years doing that for really motivated people. It was remarkably rewarding for myself and for my clients. And I'll also say that, like, he said exactly the thing that I, as an instructor, would love to hear in my best students, in my best clients. So that almost felt like a kind of deja vu for me when he said exactly those words. And one more thing, I did not do the thing that a podcaster is supposed to do. At the end of every interview, you're supposed to say, so, how do people find out more about you? And then the person gives their website. I forgot to do that. So here I'm doing it now. Alan Stevelman has a website, and it is alanstevelmanmyportfolio.com. And I'll spell that for you. Alan, A-L-A-N, Stevelman, S-T-I-V-E-L-M-A-N, all one word, .myportfolio.com. And that's his website. You can contact him through there, and it has trailers and information on how to get his movies. Now, Humano is available on YouTube. You can watch the entire movie for free on YouTube. Unfortunately, there are no subtitles, so it's all in Spanish. It is very easy to find online and purchase it or rent it. I got it through iTunes, which is now called Apple TV. And it was easy to get, and it's a beautiful print, and it's a very lovely movie. I would like to take this moment to thank Lauren Cutts for his intro and outro music. And I would also like to thank Andrea Lissette Villiers on the gong. If you've made it this far, thank you so much. Bye now.